Hi, and welcome to the Nursing Standard podcast. I'm Claire Reid, I'm a health journalist, and I'm your host for this episode, which is exploring the issue of conflict management and resolution. Conflicts often emerge in high-pressure professions and working environments, and nursing and health and care are no exception to that rule. Today, we're going to be exploring one specific type of conflict, that between nurses and patients. How can nurses recognise when this sort of conflict might be emerging? How can they avoid such situations escalating? And, importantly, how can they keep themselves, their colleagues, and their patients safe when conflict does arise? I have an excellent guest alongside me to help us answer some of those important questions. Let me introduce you to her. Alison Wren qualified as a mental health nurse in 2004 and spent almost 20 years working in acute settings. Since 2022, she's been a full-time trainer on the DMI team at Midlands Partnership NHS Foundation Trust. That's the De-escalation Management and Intervention Team. Alison and her colleagues train nurses across the country in techniques on how to manage conflict. Alison, delighted to have you with us on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Claire. Lovely to meet you and lovely to be here and have the opportunity to talk about this subject to you today. Thank you.
Thank you. So I am always interested in what I call origin stories, which I think sounds a little bit Marvel superhero-esque, as though I'm asking Peter Parker to talk about when he was bitten by the spider. But all I really mean is how nurses became interested in the specific area that they practice in. So talk to me about how you first became interested in this issue of conflict between patients and staff.
Thanks, Claire. It's quite an interesting question because it's been embedded in my nursing practice throughout, really. But I would say when I first qualified as a mental health nurse, I was quite naive. I didn't have much experience of having to deal with conflicts. I was lucky in that way from my own personal life. And so it was anxiety provoking to think that I might have to deal with conflicts. I came into nursing to look after people, to care for people, to support them. Conflict was an aspect of it I hadn't fully considered, I think, really, as a student nurse. When I was first qualified, I thought, I need to know about this. I haven't got any skills in this area. I was concerned about things like violence and aggression. I'm a small person, so it's very easy to think, well, what can I do? I'm only 5'3", female, I'm small. One of the reasons I chose to be a trainer and then to move into it full time, when I first had my training back in the noughties, it tended to be the trainers would be tall men, people with a background in security and those sorts of things. I felt it was really good for nursing staff to see that you didn't need men to teach you how to resolve conflicts. And actually, women are quite good at it as well.
Absolutely. And that's such an important point, isn't it? Given obviously what the nursing workforce generally looks like, as you say, and as someone who's 5'2", I definitely associate with what you're saying. What type of conflicts are most common, do you think, between a nurse and a patient? What are some of the triggers, some of the common reasons that they can emerge?
Fear is a big thing. It's quite frightening being in hospital. And when people are frightened or anxious, that can come out as aggression. Communication breakdown is a big thing. A lack of understanding, communication barriers, people feeling out of control, and also rules and boundaries. So there's adults trying to put in boundaries for adults, and the priorities of the patient and the priorities of the staff are not always the same. If you look at particular specialisms in a mental health environment, people being restricted, not being allowed to do things that they would normally do in their everyday life is very difficult for people. I've worked a lot with staff from places like surgical units. There's more conflict coming from things that are outside a nurse's control, such as operations being cancelled, services being under pressure, the journey that the patient has had to go through to actually get to inpatient care. And then have something cancelled due to somebody else's need, that's an understandable form of conflict as well.
That's really helpful. Thanks, Alison. And really important point you were making about the circumstances in which nurses find themselves that aren't within their gift to alter. Where someone is getting frustrated, is feeling stressed, is feeling fearful, is feeling out of control, it strikes me that there are probably different ways in which that feeling may manifest. Talk us through some of the behaviours that a nurse might encounter in this kind of conflict situation.
I think verbal aggression is the biggest thing. People start to lose control, they start to get upset, voices start to get raised. The next stage is people starting to use their bodies in a posturing way to become threatening. So invasion of space, threats, gestures, finger wagging, those sorts of things. And then obviously, if de-escalation doesn't work, that might then become things like throwing things around, breaking notice boards, and then you may have moving on to physical behaviours. So within the world of DMI and physical holding, we think about assaultative behaviours, such as hitting, biting, stamping, headbutting, but then also resistive behaviours, so not engaging, refusing to sit down, refusing to stand up, refusing to leave the area, refusing to enter an area. They're resistive behaviours. They're different to assaultative. And then things like refusal of treatment. So people feel disempowered, but one thing they can control is whether or not they take some medication, usually putting the Mental Health Act to one side. So people will use that as a form of control. And that can be hard for nurses to understand sometimes. Maybe they've had a conflict, and now the patient is refusing their antibiotic. And it's easy for a nurse to feel, well, that's just harming you. Why would you do that? But it is a method of control. And we need to learn to understand these behaviours.
So let's start to talk about how nurses can deal with some of these behaviours and possibly also how nurses can avoid situations escalating. What are some of the early intervention de-escalation techniques that might be helpful?
Within DMI training, we would always say that we manage the incident before it started. I always say my favourite incident to manage is the incident that never happened. And I think we start to manage conflict by rapport building. So making people feel welcome in the environment. I talk quite a bit in my training around the hospitality of hospital and how it's a very unfamiliar environment, quite an unpleasant environment for people. Obviously, as nurses, we are extremely busy. Sometimes we don't settle people into hospitals very well because of so many different priorities. I've stolen this off one of my colleagues, but we have a little analogy called a therapeutic piggy bank. So if you're working with a patient, if you spend some time to show genuine interest in them, to build rapport, to say, please and thank you, to ensure their basic needs are met, to give them little compliments when you pass by or just pass the time of day. Every time you do that with a patient, you are putting a little therapeutic penny into your piggy bank. And then when harder times develop, when you want some cooperation, when people are starting to become agitated and could escalate further, at that point, you need to be able to make a withdrawal from your therapeutic piggy bank to gain some cooperation from that patient. And if your piggy bank is full, you'll be able to withdraw greatly from that and have a successful intervention. If you have not put anything into your piggy bank, you'll have nothing to draw on to get some goodwill from that person in difficult times.
And it strikes me that that brings it right back to feeling this is something that's absolutely inherent to nursing. You talked about that idea, didn't you, when you were starting out as a nurse, is feeling that this issue of conflict, that feels very separate from what I've come in to do. Mm. But actually that rapport building goes right to the heart of empathy and compassion and all of these qualities that we associate with good nursing. We've talked too about the idea, as you sensibly said, that factors that might be stressing someone out, that might be making them more prone to aggression, aren't always, unfortunately, in the direct control of the nurse. It could be that they've had a poor experience before even arriving in that setting. Where you have got someone where that rapport building hasn't been possible because of circumstances, and you have someone who is coming in and starting to really demonstrate verbal aggression, physical aggression, what do nurses need to be doing then? What can they be doing to help de-escalate when someone is already in that state?
So if you've got someone already in that state, first of all, let's take a step back. So personal space is very, very important. When people become angry, they're full of adrenaline, they're filtering for danger, and they're in a defensive frame of mind. So if you're too close to people, it can make them feel threatened. People who are angry need more space. So take a step back so that you aren't intimidating them, and also so that you're beyond arm's reach, so that you're maintaining your own personal safety. Another important thing, I feel, is to allow people to ventilate their concerns. Often people come to a situation and they are upset for a genuine reason. If someone's coming up to you saying, I'm absolutely fuming, my wife's operation's been cancelled again, we've come in from 50 miles away, she's been fasting since last night, this is the second or third time it's happened, I think all you can really do is validate that and say, absolutely, I can understand how that is very difficult for you. I would feel the same. I'm terribly sorry. What we don't want to do is justify it and start to say, well, this other person's more ill than you, or this other person had to take priority. That doesn't help the person who has had their operation cancelled. So you have to be very focused on them. And in our DMI, we've got these three P's, which are called position, posture, and proximity. And from a physical point of view, those will keep you as safe as you can be. So position, we try to stand off someone's center line. Try to stand to the side. If you stand face on in front of somebody, that in itself is intimidating. And if the person wants to go away, they've got to shove you out the way. So now you've kind of created a situation where they sort of had to assault you to get away. So we'll stand off to the side, on a sort of side angle, nice feet flat to the floor, so we've got a stable base. And proximity, we'll make sure we're beyond arm's reach, or if things have escalated to a point that we've had to physically hold on to someone to maintain their safety or others, then we need to get very, very close. So those are some things about our position, posture, and proximity that are really, really important. We also need to role model calmness. So if someone's shouting at us, we need to keep a calm tone. We need to think about our body language as well. So we need to think about ourselves being non-threatening. Actually, people who are upset and angry, it's body language and facial expression that they pay most attention to. The words you say are actually the least of what's paid attention to. How you say it is more important. Just like when you're a child, my mother used to say to me, not what you've said, Alison, it's the way you said it. And that's the same for nurses. And I don't think any nurse means to have a harsh tone, but if you're hot, tired, frustrated, hungry, thirsty, got quite a lot of people asking you quite a lot of things all at the same time, that can come across in your tone of voice. Also with our body language, when someone is shouting at us, we will have an adrenaline release. There is no way around it. You don't control that yourself. It is frightening and it is anxiety provoking to have somebody standing there shouting at you. We talk a lot about state management, how to manage your own state so that you don't portray anger, frustration, and fear yourself. Now, when we release adrenaline, we start to get hot, we start to get sweaty, our heart starts to race, sweaty palms, and your body is telling you you are in danger. Your own posture will change. So your face might get a bit stressed looking. You might even clench your fists without realizing. So you have to be aware of that yourself. And we have to manage our own state and think, well, what am I bringing to this situation? I need to drop my shoulders. I need to take a breath. I need to relax my facial expression. And I need to take a step back. And then you will appear calm and confident and in control. And that links into another thing we talk about in DMI, fake it till you make it. You have to appear calm and confident and in control. And once you appear calm and confident, you actually will become calm and confident. And that's what the patient wants to see.
Fake it till you make it, always good advice in so many different settings, I think.
Absolutely,
as you say, the way you portray yourself is the way you actually become often. And I think that's such an important point. You touched there also on situations where physical restraint is necessary. Talk a little about that and what nurses need to be thinking about when it does unfortunately get to that stage.
Obviously, we've got duty of care to patients, duty of care to ourselves, duty of care to everybody in the building and using our facilities. So we have to be ready to intervene if there is a need to physically hold on to somebody. But we need to be least restrictive. We need to use it as a last resort. We need to make sure that we're doing it to manage a risk and that the physical holding is improving the situation. Because sometimes some people, if you physically hold on to them, it makes people worse. And certainly if we're thinking about neurodiverse people, people with autism, people with learning disabilities, sometimes physical holding can make things worse. We have to continue to use our de-escalations. The communication still is very important. Nobody ever calmed down because they were being physically held. Being physically held is frightening. We need to then go to that person after the event and check they're okay, offer them some post-incident support, offer them to do the chance to see a doctor. Do they want to speak to their family? Would they like to write down something about what happened, their point of view? Give them a chance to explain why, to ask questions, to show people that you do still care about them and they're still here to be looked after, regardless of whether they've presented a risk to the staff. They still are entitled to care just as much as everybody else. So post-incident support is where we will start to rebuild those therapeutic relationships and give that person a voice and try to give them some choice perhaps for next time. So if they are somebody who's in services for a long period of time, they might say, I would prefer if people didn't hold on to me, maybe could you stand back and give me 5 more minutes? And then you would put that into a care plan to say, step back, give the person space. And so they've got some sort of agency.
We are coming to the end of our time. I want to sneak in two quick questions before we wrap up. The first is, what are some of the biggest myths that you hear about conflict resolution? What are the misunderstandings out there that you would like to set the record straight on in this episode of the podcast?
Well, one thing I'll say straight away, nobody in the history of humankind has ever calmed down because someone told them, calm down, will you? Because if they could calm down, they would. So there's certain trigger words like calm down, what you're doing that for, stop, those sorts of things, very unhelpful things to say. So don't be telling people to calm down, because they would have done if they could have done. And actually that's a very escalatory thing to say to somebody. English is very back to front, so if somebody looks like they're going to punch you, don't say don't punch me, because they're going to hear punch me, because they are in that heightened state. What you want to say is, can you put your arms down by your side, please? Because that is a positive message. Now that takes strength of mind and state management when somebody's looking like they're going to punch you, but that's why there's training. And another thing I would say is, conflicts are not resolved with a winner and loser. So we're not trying to win. We're not trying to make people come around to our point of view. We're not trying to change people. Conflicts are resolved with compromise and flexibility.
Well said. And before we wrap up, what one thing do you want nurses to remember about conflict resolution?
So what I would say is, and some nurses might find this difficult, it's easier to change your own behaviour than try to change the behaviour of another adult. So think about what you're bringing to the situation and change that. And that might help the person change what they're doing.
Thanks so much, Alison. And that's another tip which is relevant in loads of contexts. So I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I'm sure.
Life skills.
Absolutely. I'm sure that that's something that many people can take away and apply in all manner of situations. We are now, unfortunately, at the end of our time, but not wanting to risk any conflict, I'm not going to finish before offering a huge thanks to Alison for sharing her time and expertise, as well as thanks to you for joining us. I hope you found today's episode of the podcast helpful and it's given you loads of tips to go away and apply in your own practice. See you again next time.